insiders, the big controversies, the big debates. Steinberg, Kerr, the big show. Sportsnet 960.
Well, it seemed like yesterday we talked ad nauseum about streaks involving the Calgary Stampeders and bye weeks and streaks involving the Calgary Stampeders and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers in Winnipeg. And both of them stayed alive. Now, 14-0, the Stampeders coming off a bye since July 1st of 2005. And you can make it 23 of their last 26 visits to Winnipeg. It was a 33-18 win by the visitors over the home side, but let's stick with the home side because, quite honestly, they're the bigger story. Stephen Brunt from Sportsnet says it's tough to be a Bombers fan.
Number one, they've had very little to cheer about for a while now. They have, they have the incredibly long championship drought in a place where people care about the CFL, but recent years just dreadful, digging themselves a deeper hole every season. But what do you want to do now? You want to fire Mike O'Shea? Okay, fire Mike O'Shea. Who replaces Mike O'Shea? Well, the logical candidate would be Paul Lapolis, who would be the architect of the offense that is, non-functioning with Drew Willey. That's, I can't imagine they would go anywhere other than Lapo. But how do you hand him the keys, given that the biggest problem with this team, and they've got, they've got injury problems, and I understand there's some extenuating circumstances. The number one problem with this team all season long has been that they are inept as an offense, except during kind of garbage time at the end of games. So how do you hand the keys to the guy who's running that offense? And everybody in Winnipeg loves Paul Lapolis, but he hasn't exactly burnished his resume this season.
When I first arrived in Calgary 13 years ago, the Calgary Stampeders were, to put it simply, not very good. Actually terrible, and they were for the next couple of years. And boy, it is hard in the CFL to generate interest and conversation with a team that is going nowhere and going nowhere fast. So it is somewhat of a relief and somewhat more enjoyable, I suppose, on some sort of cynical, dark level that to talk about somebody else's dumpster fire. But that is what the Winnipeg Blue Bombers are right now. They are a dumpster fire. And that seems to be what we spend a lot of time in sports with now, Derek. Somebody else's problem. You don't want it to be your team. You want it to be somebody else's problem because then you can play mad scientist. You can fire the coach and get rid of the quarterback. You can do this. You can do that. I just sit and look. We talked to Justin Dunk about it yesterday. We heard from Stephen Brunt today. I am one of those people that believes the more competitive, what's the word? It's not parity. Remember that. It's not parity. It's competitive balance.
Competitive balance.
Competitive balance. The more competitive balance you have, the better. And right now, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers are not holding up their end of this bargain. It was a good win by the Calgary Stampeders. It was well executed for, I think, most perhaps the first 40, 50 minutes of the game. Again, more garbage time points, and we can talk about that later. I don't know how much that really concerns anybody. The Stampeders have two wins this year, both against Winnipeg. Winnipeg now has started off this season 1-4, cannot win at home. Drew Willey was pulled for Matt Nichol. Now you have a goaltender. Now you have a quarterback controversy. You have the controversy involving the coach, if you feel there's one. And those are great, and those are sexy, and those are fun, and you can throw open phone lines, and everybody has an opinion on it. But I find it, to dig down to the bottom and really find out what's wrong, really talk about change, that's a different conversation. Because it's fundamental. It's structural. It's all the way deep and ingrained in that clubhouse right now, right through that locker room, right through management. The fan base deserves better in Winnipeg, but I don't know where you start. I don't know where are you going to go get a better quarterback right now than Drew Willey? And I know he's no screaming hell. I get that. I understand what he is. I saw him play last night. Matt Nichol's not the answer either, but I don't know. Do you fire the coach? Okay, fire the coach. What does that do? It satisfies a bunch of people who want to head on a pike. But does that make you any better? Where do you go get a coach in the CFL in the middle of the season? I don't know what you do.
But as you mentioned, it comes down to executing the fundamentals. And that is something the Blue Bombers simply haven't done regularly enough this season. And it goes back to what we talked about yesterday, Rob.
Yeah.
When previewing this game, we talked about the struggles of Drew Willey. Those continued last night. We talked about the Stampeders' success and confidence right on third and short. Well, the Blue Bombers had an opportunity to convert a third down, they needed 1 yard, couldn't do it.
Now, are you talking about the one where the Stampeders were offside?
Yes.
Because they were blatantly offside.
But
You've got to work through that. You've got to solve that problem yourself. You got screwed by the official, whatever you want to say, that's fine. But that's going to happen. And what happened? They melted, right? They melted.
And what else did we talk about yesterday? The kickers.
Yeah.
They miss another extra point.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, but so do the Stamps, right?
But if we talked about both kickers yesterday. Yeah,
fair enough.
But I mean, if you can't execute the basics of the game,
yeah,
you're like, not going to win in this league.
Like tackling?
Tackling is important in football.
I mean, Anthony Parker, what? You size shoelaces? You were going to grab him by the shoelaces and bring him down? What was that? And I like Anthony Parker. I thought Anthony had a great game and he deserves all the credit in the world. But to your point about fundamentals, and then I don't know if you saw TSN's interview at the half with an what's Mike O'Shea got left to say? He needs to make plays. Bo Levi Mitchell is, to me, one of the true great athletes. Love the kid. Love him as an athlete. Love him better off the field. All those sort of things. He threw a pick six right into the Winnipeg Blue Bombers' arms. Right in there. Dropped. Fundamentals. You said it. It's easy to talk about. It's a whole other thing. And that's all they have to, because I don't think you can go get a better quarterback right now in the middle of the season. I don't think you can get a better coach in the middle of the season. You got to clean your own house up and you got to start with the fundamentals.
You do. And trying to go out there and get a new coach midseason, first of all, it's easier said than done. And is that really going to solve your problem? Because the coach puts a game plan together. The coach motivates his players. Yeah. But ultimately, it's up to the players to go out on the field and execute the game plan. And they're not doing that.
And you know,
is that the coach's fault?
Yeah. But you know who played? I'll tell you who played with pride last night. Is Weston Dressler. Dressler was a beast. He was an absolute beast for Winnipeg. He had 12 catches, 118 yards, and a touchdown. He was in on the two-point conversion. They need people to be paying attention to Weston Dressler. They need guys to be mimicking him right now. They need that kind of intensity. There's one guy that's taking care of the details, correct?
Correct. But ultimately, if your quarterback isn't, you have a problem.
Yep.
Because much like the goaltender in hockey, the quarterback in football can be make or break. If you don't get good goaltending, tough
right.
to win.
Yep.
If you don't get good play under center, tough to win. So you get Matt Nichols in the game late. And I agree, Rob, he's probably not the answer. He's probably not better than Drew Willie. There's a reason why Willie's been the starter.
Came in and had a nice drive. I have no problem with that.
So if you're not going to change the head coach, maybe you try changing the quarterback. Even if you don't think you're upgrading that position, maybe it's just to send a message to the team that, listen, this is on the players. You guys have to be better. And maybe it's a one-quarter thing. Maybe it's a one-series thing. I don't know, but maybe that's a direction they can go in. But I mean,
here's one thing I'll throw out. Since we're talking about the quarterback, and I'll run this one by you, and this comes completely from a non-football coach. I've never once tried to pretend that I've ever coached a lick in football or anything like that. But what I don't understand is the reluctance to pull a quarterback out when things aren't working and have them watch a series. And I go back, and the only reason I bring this up is I remember taking calls about Henry Burris when he first came here, and it was Hank and it was Frank. It was good Henry, it was bad Henry. And people were always saying, why don't they just pull him out and put him aside? Tom Higgins did that. Tom Higgins took him out. I think with Danny McManus here, it was easy to do that. You know, with some other veteran guys, you can do that. With Matt Nichols, I think you can take Drew Willie out. I don't know if it makes a difference, and I might just, you know, this might be just kind of that mental math that you do in your head because you want to try everything, but why not sit him and let the other guy, and watch, just watch the other guy for a minute.
Clear your head. Try to compose yourself.
Yeah.
And...
but to your point about fundamentals, it's not his fault that guys on second and 10 are running 8-yard routes.
Right, and maybe in the past it was an opportunity to take a look at some photos, try to figure out how the defense is setting up.
Yeah, yeah.
Try to find out if there are any holes in the defense that you could potentially exploit. But in today's day and age, all of that stuff is available to these players in real time. So it's something that... clearly, they've thought about doing. They did it last night, finished the game, and had a little bit of a rally anyway. But I think there are bigger issues in Winnipeg, and whether it's the head coach or the quarterback, or it goes beyond that. And it's probably a combination of different things, but things just aren't working there for them right now. And Again, if they can start executing the fundamentals of the game, they will be better. And whether or not that's good enough for them to win consistently in the CFL, that'll be up for debate.
You just brought it up, and I was going to hold on to it till the Football Friday segment, but I'll throw it in there right now. So these two teams have played twice, and the Stampeders have outscored Winnipeg 69-40. You know what the scariest part of that is? 26 of Winnipeg's 40 points have come in the third quarter, or in the fourth quarter, garbage time. Maybe not so much last night, but certainly the 15 that in Calgary were garbage time. And then last night, yeah, they got close, and then Calgary said, no, you know, we're back in this. Beautiful drive, defensive, you know, touchdown. There was a lot going on there, but 40 points, 26 have been scored in the fourth quarter. Too little, too late. Too little, too late. That's illustrated what you just talked about.
Okay, but flipping that over to the Stampeders,
yeah.
What does that say about them?
Well, and that's, you know, we're going to hear from Alex Singleton later on, and I kind of asked him about that. It's a thing that I would take a yellow sticky to or a highlighter to if I was a coach. My guess is they'll hear about it because coaches want to harp on something and you need to. I thought the Stampeders were, there's no doubt who the best team on the field was last night. But you know and I know that when you have nothing to say, there's no such thing as a perfect game. There's always something to work on. If I'm the Stampeders coaching staff, that's where I'm hitting
absolutely.
That's where I'm hitting the defense. Look, you gave them, and you know, again, TSN did a marvelous job with their audio at the end, you know, catching the sidelines, screaming, play it out, finish the game. I guess I'm kind of worried about it. No, I guess I'm using it as an instrument of teaching right now, and I'm filing it away and saying, okay, once we play somebody else other than Winnipeg, is this an issue? But yeah, absolutely. Don't you think?
And against a better team, it might be an issue. And that's why it's
well,
an
you
opportunity
look at the end,
for
look
the
at
coaching
that end of that
staff
Ottawa
to use
game.
That.
Look
right.
at the end of that Ottawa game, right?
It's an opportunity for the coaches to tell their players we need to play from start to finish. We can't have these lapses where we let down. But yeah. You know what? Going into yesterday's game, Rob, we both wondered if the Stampeders might lack a little motivation because they did pretty much blow out the Blue Bombers in their first meeting of the season at McMahon Stadium back in July 1st. And I worried that they might play down to their competition a little bit.
Mm.
And I guess for stretches of last night's game, they did. But all in all, I thought they were up for the game. They played better than their opponents did.
Yeah.
And I just think they're more talented.
They are.
than the Bombers are.
There's no doubt about that.
And we talked a lot about the Stamps' offensive line being back intact last night. And when you compare the two teams up front, I think that's where there's a big difference as well.
Well, George Hopkins, Geo, the best when it comes to equipment men in the CFL and in almost all of pro sports, I would say, probably didn't have to wash Bo Levi Mitchell's jersey. Didn't get sacked. There wasn't a lot of hurries. There wasn't a lot of rush in there. Maybe sometimes he had too much time. If that's a problem, maybe he had a little bit of that going on last night. But you're right. To me, it goes all the way back. The Stampeders move on and play BC next Friday. That's what you have to worry about. They're just taking care of business. And we'll have Justin Dunk on our CFL Insider later on. But I am fascinated by Winnipeg because I don't think it is a quick fix. And I think you hit the nail on the head. You can talk about the coaching, you can talk about the quarterback, but unless you fundamentally are doing everything, and there's so many examples last night of just bad tackling, bad plays, drop balls, not making plays, runners, and again, this is about the third time I've said it this segment, but they did a really smart job of it. I thought TSN highlighted the routes. When you're second and 10, you can't be turning out at 8 yards, and that's what Winnipeg's doing. Fundamentals. Fundamentals.
Now, if you're a Blue Bombers fan, just to be devil's advocate here, maybe you're saying, well, maybe we do have the talent, and if we can get our fundamentals sorted out, this will be a better football team.
Well, we get our crap in order.
Right.
And absolutely. And I think I look at Dressler and go, we need more of that. We need more of that. Harris, I don't know. Running backs, are, you know, it takes a lot. You got to have the offensive line to open it up. You need some things. You know, he was really ineffective last night. 10 carries, 28 yards, right? Jerome Messam, not bad, 13, 65 yards, but he killed the clock when they needed the clock killed. He did what he needed to do. We got him a couple of big first downs. I didn't see that from Harris. And it comes back, and then there we are with Willie. And everybody seems to think Willie has these kind of deceiving numbers. 23 of 33, 234 yards, not bad, but one INT, no TDs. One INT, no TDs. Somebody else's problem. right?
For now it is.
For now. For now. It's somebody else's problem. Catch me up on your boy. How's the Canadian Open looking right now?
All right. Well, Canadians are certainly in contention at the RBC Canadian Open at Glen Abbey in Oakville. Unfortunately, Jared Dutoit, who has been in Calgary for the last couple of years, plays out of Glencoe Golf and Country Club, which, by the way, was ranked 35 in the country by Score Golf in their top 100, which came out earlier today, has dropped a shot. So he is back to even par for his second round, 5-under for the tournament, two shots behind the two guys tied for the lead, Dustin Johnson and Luke List. As far as other Canadians who are in contention, Garrett Rank, who found out on Wednesday that he is a full-time NHL official for next season, the part-time golfer, he is even par in the second round, still 3-under for the tournament, so he's four shots off the pace. And there was one more Canadian, and I'm having trouble finding him on my leaderboard here, so he must have slid down.
Oh, well.
Adam Hadwin. He was minus three for the second round, Rob.
Right.
He's given two shots back. He's now minus one.
And I told you this off the air. And the problem, my thing with golf is great first day stories are not meaningful till day three. Because we've had that a million times, right? Right out of the gate and then fall back to the pack in the second. By the time, you know, they might not even make the cut, or by the time Sundays are not in contention anymore. God, would I love some of these guys to be there Saturday into Sunday. Then that would be phenomenal, right?
And I'm not going to lie. One of the reasons why I focused so much on the stories of the Canadians at the RBC Canadian Open was because I was worried that they wouldn't be a story come Saturday in the third round of the tournament. Looks like there will be some Canadians that make the cut, of course, which is always good for everybody involved, whether it be the organizers or the spectators or the TV broadcasters. But somewhat surprised who is in contention as far as Canadian golfers go at this tournament. If you were to tell me before the tournament started that Jared Dutoit and Garrett Rank, a couple of amateurs, would be the top two Canadians at the national championship, I probably would have looked at you like you have three heads. Adam Hadwin's a guy who I thought might make some noise this week, but really I was focused more on the two guys who are going to represent our country at the Olympics in David Hearn and Graham Dillette. Hearn is a guy who was right there until the end last year.
Yep.
Thought he might finally snap that streak of the long winless streak for Canadians at the RBC Canadian Open. Right now, he is 3-over par, so he's in a little trouble. Graham Dillette continues to have trouble with his chipping. Shanked one yesterday. He is even in the second round, but unfortunately, 5-over for the tournament. Those are the two guys who I thought would probably be the best Canadians at this event, and doesn't look like that's going to be the way it works out. As for Mike Weir, well, it just goes to show you, it doesn't matter how good you once were or how much talent you have, if you don't play and if you don't practice, you're not going to compete. The former Masters champion, 8-over, and that's through his first round. He's 2-over in the second after not a very good first day.
That's your look at the Canadian Open at Glen Abbey. We'll update it as the afternoon goes on, and obviously paying close attention to the Calgary contingent, the Canadian contingent as well. Yesterday, we were telling you about this great contest we have, and you have today, and I believe part of Monday, but mostly today, if you're a fan club member, to get in on it. Next Wednesday, we're going to take a winner and a guest out fishing. Cody Earle, a fishing enthusiast. I call him a pro fisherman. He prefers fishing enthusiast. Avid fisherman. Terminology is so important. Anyway, Cody was good enough to come on to us and talk to us yesterday and kind of give us a lay of the land of what next week's going to look like. Then he sent us an email today, and he just wanted to update it. So it is a fishing trip for you and a friend, and we're going to go out there. We're going to fish.
Are you going to catch?
Alberta Marine. It's called fishing. It's not called catching. I don't make promises, right? It's called fishing, not catching. We've got boats supplied by Alberta Marine and Greg of the staff down in Natton. But Cody sent an email today, and he said he has picked up a prize package from Rapella, which includes a rod reel combo, line hat, specialty fishing tools, and some of his own selected Rapella crankbaits. So it's about $1,000 worth of prizes that he's going to give to the winner. So that's added if you are a – and again, I'm looking for a mom, a dad to take a son, a daughter. Somebody who's never been fishing, wants to get introduced to the great sport. This is the best way to do it. Head on over to sportsnet.ca/960 if you're a fan club member. Enter, get in that contest today. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Cody, for sweetening that pot. That's pretty cool. Well, the gauntlet was thrown down at the top of the last hour. Apparently, Mr. Wills wants to talk hockey, so we'll do it when we come back. A little Flames conversation for you. And I think Mr. Wills might have to appear in front of the Sportsnet 960 court later on this hour. We might have to put Maddie Rose, our judge, to work. I think there was a transgression. So we'll talk. Well, go, no, go ahead. Go ahead.
Quick story.
Yes.
It has little to do with fishing or catching, but
yes.
When I was younger, I got pulled over.
Yes.
And the officer got out of his car and walked up to mine and asked me for my license and my registration.
Yes.
And he said, you know why I pulled you over, son? I said, yeah, I was speeding. I said, but what about all the other people that were speeding? I had people passing me and you didn't pull them over. What's up with that? He said, son, have you ever been fishing? I said, yes. He goes, did you catch every fish in the lake? I had nothing left to say.
There's nothing left to say. But I'm happy that you have some experience with the law, because it looks like we might have to take you to court later this hour. All right, we'll take a break and come back. A little Flames talk around the corner. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Some guests on Sportsnet 960 appear on the South Street Burger guest hotline. Enjoy flame-grilled burgers paired with local craft beer. Visit their new location, now open in East Hills, 17th Ave Southeast and Stony Trail.
The big interviews, the big stories, the big opinions. It's The Big Show on Sportsnet 960, Calgary.
Football Friday's coming up, 3 o'clock. Justin Dunk will join us. Alex Singleton of the Calgary Stampeders. Later on, you know him, you love him, from the Calgary Sun and Sportsnet, Eric Francis. Francis Fridays for the Beltliner. Came in, sat down, and Mr. Wills was talking to the text line. And part of the conversation was about upcoming Flame season, line combinations. And there were some other things in there. We'll take care of those other things a little later on, as we'll probably put Judge Matt to work with a little court appearance later on this hour, Sportsnet 960 Kangaroo Court. We haven't done that in a long time, or ever. But we'll do it today.
Well, I feel honored.
There's always got to be a first, right? But let's get to the Flame stuff, first of all, because it's, you know, just did a, our pal Darren Haynes, he did a podcast, and he was talking about it.
You were on that podcast?
No, Rusty the Engineer was. I wasn't on that podcast. Rusty the Engineer. But he wanted to talk about line combinations. You want to talk about line combinations. I have written in my book, 225, Flames offseason. It's now 2:31, so we're 6 minutes late to get to this, but that's all right. We can do either. I was going to ask you, first of all, what you felt like the Flames have accomplished so far this offseason, or we can do line combinations, or we can do both. Quite honestly, I have an open mind on all of this.
Yeah, let's do both.
Okay.
Well, I'll start there, though. I think they've accomplished a ton. I mean, they needed to find a new coach. Head coach and assistant coaches, which they've done.
Which they've done, yep. No, I got a check mark there.
I don't know a lot about Dave Cameron and Paul Girard yet. I've heard a lot of good things from a lot of people. But my first impression of Glenn Gullitson, very, very good. Bright guy, passionate guy, and different than Bob Hartley, which I think is important as well. Obviously, they had to get the goaltending figured out.
Got a check mark there.
Big check mark there. And I must admit, and I said this during our coverage of the 2016 NHL draft in Buffalo, that when I heard about the trade for Brian Elliott, Rob, I wasn't excited. And the reason I felt that way at the time was because you'd heard all about Ben Bishop.
Right.
Vezina Trophy finalist.
Right.
Marc-Andre Fleury, now a two-time Stanley Cup champion.
Right.
Had a really good regular season.
Yep.
Brian Elliott wasn't that sexy name.
Nope.
But the more I thought about it, the more I like the move for the Flames, because if they make a trade for Bishop,
mm-hmm.
first of all, the price tag would have been a lot higher than their first of 3 second round picks. No doubt about it.
Let me stop you there for a second. What about today, though? Had the Flames, and this is me completely, and I like the move. I think I'm one of the people that was on record in November saying that Brian Elliott was a guy that the Flames should target just because of his situation, if no other reason. But now, having watched the Lightning go through what the Lightning have done since July 1st or before, If the Flames had been a little more patient, would that price tag have come down for Bishop?
I think it absolutely would have, because I don't think the Lightning thought Steven Stamkos was coming back. They thought Stamkos was going elsewhere, and they had the money that they had put aside for him available to pay Bishop. Now, they weren't in a hurry to get rid of a guy who is, in my opinion, one of the best goaltenders in the league.
Yeah.
Now, they've got Stamkos back and under contract for a very long time.
Right.
They almost have to move Bishop at this point in time, but the market's closed up.
Mm-hmm.
Who out there, outside of the Stars, is looking for a goaltender? Mm-hmm. And to make that deal with the Stars work, you're probably going to have to take one of their two goaltenders back, even if they retain some of the salary.
Right.
Whether it's Lehtinen or Niemi. So it's a great question. I do think the price tag would be lower for Bishop now than it was at that time. But timing is everything. And I said the first reason why I like the Flames going out getting Bishop was because the price tag was lower than it would have been to get Bishop.
Oh, Elliot, getting Elliot.
Elliot, sorry.
Yeah.
The price tag to get Elliot lower than it would have been to get Bishop and lower than it would have been to get Fleury. The Penguins, for whatever reason, don't seem to be in a hurry to move Fleury. Maybe because there's still some concern that, you know, they saw some great things from Murray down the stretch and in the Stanley Cup playoffs. He ultimately led them to the Cup.
Yeah.
But young goaltender, you worry about consistency maybe, so that could explain it. But the second reason, Rob, if they get Bishop or Fleury, they quite simply don't have the money to get Troy Brouwer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Elliott's contract is phenomenal. $2.5 million for next season. So that saved them $3.5-4 million in comparison to what it would have cost them to get a Bishop or a Fleury. So that allows them to fill another need. And for me, their two biggest needs going into the offseason on the ice were finding a starting goaltender and finding another right winger. And Brouwer, he might not have been the biggest fish in the pond, but I think he's the type of guy the Flames needed to play wing, whether that be on the top line with Sean Monahan and Johnny Gaudreau, or potentially on a line with Sam Bennett and whoever.
Yeah. The Bishop one is intriguing to me. I look at it as, you know, 99.9% that he's going elsewhere. And the only reason I leave the door open is because Renaud Lavoie, I believe twice or three times with Pat, went back and said, don't count the Flames out, that they may go back there. What we do know is that as of today, right now, the Flames will need new goaltenders again next year because Chad Johnson's on a 1-year deal, and Brian Elliott's deal is expiring. My assumption is, my belief is, they'll probably work to get extensions at least with Elliott, maybe beyond, maybe with both. But until that happens, there is that door, is there not?
Oh, absolutely. And is there really a rush to extend either one of those goaltenders?
I said it yesterday. I've said it over and over and over again until I'm blue in the face. I really think business around here has changed. And I'm like you. I think, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, 2 years ago, oh, we just got him. Let's extend him. And there may be a desire now to say, you know, go to his agent and go, look, we're just going to take our time with this. We like your client. This is where we think we're going to go, but we're going to wait. Just make sure this works. I think that's prudent. I think that's prudent.
And I think ultimately that's the direction they go in.
But
I'd
you
be
know,
shocked
you know
if
what,
in training
okay,
camp
but you know what happens now,
the
right?
preseason, early in the regular season, Brad Treliving announced an extension for Brian Elliott or Johnson.
Now that I've said that, at 4:25, Brian Elliott will join us to talk about his new 8-year extension, right?
I don't think so, but you never know.
But you never know. No, I mean, as I sit here today, 3 years from now, I believe Brian Elliott's going to be the starting goalie of this team. I don't know who the backup's going to be. I don't know who's going to be in the system bumping up. But I believe Brian Elliott's going to be the guy.
3 years from now?
3 years from now.
Really?
Yeah, don't you?
I'm not convinced of that.
Okay. Well, do tell. Do tell.
Well, like you said, I still think the door is open to getting a guy like Ben Bishop. I think the more time that passes, the less of a fit Marc-Andre Fleury becomes, simply because of his age. But Ben Bishop's still a fairly young guy in the prime of his
29,
career.
29, right?
29.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
Fleury's 31.
Little younger than Elliott.
Little younger.
Yep.
And also, John Gillies. If this guy's as good as they think he is, then he should be ready to play. I don't think it's going to be this year. He might get a cup of coffee if there's an injury.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure it'll be next year, Rob. Now, the one thing that is tough to predict is where a goaltender is going to be a year, two, three, five from now,
exactly,
as we've learned. And that's one of the reasons why the Flames keep bringing goaltenders in, because the more of them you have, it's like lottery tickets. And this is an analogy that the general manager, Brad Treliving, uses all the time. The more lottery tickets you have, the better your chances are to win the lottery.
Yeah.
The more goaltenders you have in your system, the better your chances are that one of those guys will be the guy moving forward. And ideally, you're in a situation like the Ducks were last year, where you've got to choose between two good young goaltenders. And then you move one and get something in return. That's what the Flames hope will happen down the road.
And it's a good way you put it, because I think that's there's this part of the droopy the dog community that goes, oh, they're going to have all these goalies, and what are they going to do? They'll find something. They'll do. Those are good problems. I've been here for all these. They don't have anybody. Now they got too many. And you can all, no, too many's great.
That's a great problem to have.
It's a great problem to have. And you know, the one that I followed, this is the line that I've fallen in love with this summer, and I think it applies to most of this. And it's the one that when Bob Hartley, somebody asked me, were you surprised Bob Hartley was fired? Surprised, yes. Shocked, no. So my guess is in 3 years it'll be Brian Elliott. It would be great if we were talking about the rise of John Gillies. But boy, you start, and you know this better than anybody, dude. You know this better than anybody. It's a process for a goalie to go from the American Hockey League to the National Hockey League, and it doesn't happen overnight.
And there's no guarantee that even a, I wouldn't call him blue chip prospect, but he's close to being in that.
I think he's blue chip. I do think he is. I really do believe that is appropriate for this organization. I think that John Gillies right now, in terms of non-NHL players, is either top one. If he's not their top, I suppose Tkachuk could be in that category. If he's not, he's 1A. But I think he's I think he's a blue chip. But now he has to develop.
Right. He played seven games last
season. That's right. That's right.
Seven. Now, he looked good in those seven games. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
There's a lot to like about this goaltender.
But he had he had the goalie version of Tommy John.
Had the goalie. How does he respond to that?
Well, hopefully good.
And I mean, he was at Flames development camp this summer.
Yeah.
With that said, he also left early.
Right.
Because maybe he wasn't as close to 100% as we were led to believe. Or maybe he was and he just left early. Who knows? But
yeah,
it is really hard to project where a goaltender is going to be years down the road.
Right.
Mason McDonald, for example, was the top goaltender taken in his draft.
That's right. And was the top-ranked goaltender in his draft, was he not?
The year after his draft, he was really good.
Yeah.
Last year, not so much.
Right.
This year, he might bounce back. He might not.
But the guy you talked about, Matt Murray, when I went to the Program of Excellence goaltending camp in June, you know, one of the things everybody was talking about, because the Stanley Cup had just wrapped up, and everybody's going to do the same thing. 4 years ago, Matt Murray was here at Winsport, and he was just another goalie. He was just another goalie. That's how this thing works.
Yeah.
Brian Elliott was drafted where? He was the what?
Wasn't he not second from last or something?
Wasn't he not last in his draft class?
He was right down there.
Right. Pecorine, on and on and on and on and on it goes, right?
There are very few Carey Prices, put it that way.
Right.
Price was taken fifth
and
overall.
And he's an anomaly.
Blue-chip prospect, played a handful of games in the American Hockey League, like three regular season and then 2021 postseason, whatever it was. Started the next year in the AHL.
Right.
And then was gone and never came back.
Right. Well, and for not even for, not necessarily even for performance reasons, sometimes it's health reasons. But for every Carey Price, there's a Rick DiPietro or a Dan Blackburn or whatever, right? Like, there's some guys that get picked high that just don't ever. It's a crapshoot. It is an absolute
Rick DiPietro, perfect example.
Yeah,
first overall.
Exactly.
It's funny because in the NHL, goaltenders are almost like running backs in the NFL.
Right.
You have to have a good one if you're going to compete.
Right.
But rarely do you see them taken in the first round.
Oh, trust me, you know, the text line will tell you where you should take them, because everybody, don't take a goal. And as soon as the first goalie goes in the draft, it's too early, it's too early. I think they want a supplementary goalie draft. That would make everybody happy. Okay, so we agree on the coach. We agreed on the, here's the two areas that we sit here in the Flames offseason, and I still have question marks. Have they addressed their depth on wing? Like Troy Brouwer. Troy Brouwer is good. But there's nothing to me to indicate that Troy Brouwer is going to play on that top line. And again, a guy with a four-year deal. There's nothing to indicate to me that Troy Brower is going to play there for 4 years. Nothing wrong with playing on the second line or even the third line if it's effective. But I sit here in July looking at this team going, they've added to the wing, but I don't know if they've addressed it yet. Does that make sense?
It does. They've also added Alex Chiasson. And a lot of people think that Troy Brower is going to play on a line with Sam Bennett. And Brad Treliving obviously didn't tip his hat and basically said, listen, this is the coach's call. Glenn Gulletson's going to decide where Troy Brower plays. Maybe that is with Sean Monahan and Johnny Gaudreau on the first line. Maybe that is with Sam Bennett and someone else on what I'm going to call the third line.
Right.
And that's assuming, of course, that you've got Michael Backlund playing with Michael Frolik and someone else on that second line. Now, those two could swap depending on how good Bennett is, but we'll have to wait and see. But for me, and I've put my lines together, and we'll see how they look when the season opens on October 12th, but I've got Brower playing on the right side of Monahan and Gaudreau, and here's why. Brower's a guy who has played with elite players and had success.
Mm-hmm.
He's played with Alex Ovechkin.
Mm-hmm.
So he knows what his role is. You look at guys who they've rotated in on that right wing, even from at times on the left side of that top line.
Yep.
Yuri Hudler was a great fit there 2 years ago. He was an okay fit there at times last year.
Yep.
He clearly fell out of favor with the Flames. They moved him to the Panthers, and they've been looking for someone to play the right side on that top line ever since. It's not easy to play with elite players, and that's one of the reasons I was excited about them taking Matthew Tkachuk, and you've got people that say, well, he put up the numbers he did because he played with elite players at the junior level like Mitch Marner and Christian Dvorak.
Mm-hmm.
But as we learned last year, it's not easy to play with elite players. You have to understand your role, and you have to think the game at the same level or at least close to the same level that those elite players do. So that's why I've got Brower there, because I feel like he could get in there on the forecheck, open up space for Monahan and Gaudreau, and go to the net. And that's something that, quite frankly, a bunch of Flames who were given the opportunity to didn't do enough of last season. They didn't go to the net.
But is he going to play on that line by default? I mean, I can't put words in your mouth, but I can certainly sit here and tell you that he was not the prototype of what I thought they might get to play there or might end up there, right?
Okay, I'll bite on that. So who did you think they were looking for in that spot?
More of a skilled player, like a Louis Erickson, like a Kyle Opozo. And I'm just throwing those names out as comparisons. Mm-hmm. I'm completely aware of the cost, the dollar figure, the term, and I'm not suggesting they missed the boat. I'm just saying, would you look at something like that? Would you do... Boy, there was a lot, and you know this, you were in Buffalo. There's a lot of chum in the water. Like, we were really under the impression that, you know, this was going to be a big-time marketplace. There have been some blockbusters, and I don't think anybody would argue with that, but I'm not sure we saw the volume of moves necessarily that was being talked about. And I was looking at, you know, if they were going to do it, are they going to do it with somebody like that? Now, Troy Brower comes in, and I think he does check boxes. There's no doubt about it. But to go back to something that the general manager said at the press conference at the end of the year, and that is a lot of what's going to move this team forward needs to be internal. It needs to be internal growth. Michael Ferland. Can Michael Ferland be that guy? Now, Michael Ferland of what we saw last year? No. Michael Ferland of the playoff series against Vancouver? Absolutely. Does he develop?
But he wasn't playing on that line in that series against the Canucks.
No. He was not. But he was an impactful player.
Right.
He was the type of player that you would love to have that you just talked about with Brower. You would love him to be that, and he could grow into that. But that didn't. But will that happen this summer? He's grown up a little bit this summer off the ice.
Right now, I've got him on my second line. Believe it or not.
Okay. Is Sam Bennett a centerman for this team?
I asked Brad Treliving that question directly the day he introduced the two newest members of the hockey club, Troy Brower and Chad Johnson.
Yeah.
And he said, yes, emphatically. Okay. We want Sam Bennett to play center because based on what I've seen in a year and a bit from Sam Bennett, he was more effective as a left winger.
Yes.
And the reason I thought he was more effective, he's got that bulldog mind frame.
Right.
And he is a good skater who can get in quickly on the forecheck and cause havoc. So I liked him at left wing.
Right.
I didn't like him as much at center, and I admit that centermen are more valuable than wingers in today's
Absolutely.
NHL.
Absolutely.
So I get why they want him to play center.
Absolutely.
But there are a lot more defensive responsibilities at center than there are on the wing. So I think in order for Sam Bennett to be a good centerman in the NHL,
yeah,
he's got to think less about those responsibilities and react more. But I think that's one of the reasons why they played him up the middle at the end of last season, to get him adjusted to playing center at the NHL level, allow him to figure out those defensive responsibilities, where he should be, when he should be there, so that he's not thinking about it as much and more reacting to what he should be doing. And then he becomes that effective player again.
I agree with the premise long-term, that's where you want him. And I agree, we heard him. That's what the general manager told you. I think it's a little more fluid than that. I think it's always a little more fluid than that. And I don't think there's any, I don't think he needs to be a center, your number two, your number three tomorrow. And maybe if you get into camp and you try Brouwer and it's not working or it works better here, maybe you try Frolik, maybe you try Chiasson, maybe you try. Can't help but wonder if Sam Bennett's not an option at some point. If somebody doesn't lock in fairly quickly.
It would be awfully interesting, wouldn't it? And we did see the type of chemistry that Sam Bennett and Johnny Gaudreau had together
right.
at the Young Stars Classic 2 years ago. Now, it's against inferior competition, and judging a guy based on what happened at a rookie tournament, for all intents and purposes, 2 years ago today wouldn't be very smart. But he is a guy who thinks the game at a very high level, and I just said that in order to play with elite players, you have to have a high hockey IQ. So that could be a potential fit if they decide to move him to wing. And Johnny Gaudreau has shown that he can play the right side as well. So if you wanted to leave Sam Bennett on his natural side, the left side, you could do that. Can I just quickly run through the lines I've put together, and
you know,
then I'll get you to react?
I'll tell you what. I will put you on trial in the 4 o'clock hour.
Sounds good.
We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll do that. And then we'll go to the real football show. I do not want Maddie getting in any trouble. And me making ads play in the 3 o'clock hour that should have run in the 2 o'clock hour will get Maddie into trouble.
Oh, we don't want that to happen.
So, no, we don't want that to happen. We'll take a break and come back with more Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
The big interviews, the big stories, the big opinions. It's the big show on Sportsnet 960, Calgary.
Coming up, top of the hour, CFL insider Justin Dunk. It is Football Fridays. We'll also hear from Stampeder linebacker Alex Singleton, who apparently very busy today. I was not the only person that interviewed him. A lot of people interviewing him. He's Derek Wills. I'm Rob Kerr. We were just kicking around talking about the Flames. You want to talk about lines, so let's get there. Let's go there. Turn your microphone on. I want you to turn your microphone on.
Do you want me to go through my line combinations?
Please,
July 22nd, 2016?
Yes, because we're 83 or 82 days away from the start of the season.
Something like that.
Yes, these need to be determined now.
Okay, and I'm sure Glenn Gullitson will call and
he's listening
and ask me for my opinion after the show.
As we speak. He just texted the 960-960 line.
Well, I'm going to put my coach hat on for a minute here.
Okay,
I'm going to go from left to right.
Right.
Gaudreau, Monahan, Brouwer.
Okay.
Ferland, Backlund, Frolik.
Mm-hmm.
Shinkarak or Tkachuk with Bennett and Chiasson.
Okay.
Boma, Stajan, Hathaway.
Based on the exercise that Rusty the engineer did with Darren a couple weeks ago on his podcast, the only area that I... I see Chiasson up on the second line to start. And I see...
With Backlund.
Okay. And I see Brouwer on the third line, which by default, I think I agreed Ferland. But you brought up the name, and it is the wild card in all of this. And that's Matthew Tkachuk. I believe with every fiber in my body that this organization will not promote him for the sake of promoting him. He has to earn it. I believe it when we had a general manager let go in Jay Feaster and Brian Burke stood in front of all of us and said, I wouldn't have kept Sean Monahan. I would have set Sean Monahan back. Who knows what Sam Bennett's injury, where that would have been. I know Pat has talked openly about, he'll get his 9 games and go back sort of thing, or could get his 9 games and go back. But I me personally, having talked to the kid, been around the kid, he impresses me. He really impresses me. And I wouldn't force him in there, Derek, but I think he's got a legitimate shot of winning that job. I really do.
And I agree with you 100%, but something to keep in mind for us and for our listeners, and I know that this is something that the Flames are very well aware of as well. This team is better now than it was when Sean Monahan tried to make it as an 18-year-old.
Yes, but is it deeper?
I think that it is. You'll notice in my line combinations that there's no Brandon Bolig.
Right.
He's under contract and...
See, and
we'll probably be here.
And maybe that's that. Maybe I've phrased that, my rebuttal, a little bit different, because one of the things that, you know, I looked at, they address goaltending definitely. They address coaching definitely. I talked about addressing the wing. I have a question mark there. And depth, I have a question mark. I wouldn't say it's unprecedented, but they walked away from 9 players with qualifying offers, 3 of which were NHL players at the end of last year. That's pretty unheard of around here anyway. There is not a lot of veteran bodies that are bumping up against being career minor leaguers and NHL players. There's no Josh Juris out there. There's a Brandon Bolig, but they bring you 2 different things.
There's a Lyndon Vay.
There is a Lyndon Vay. There is a Hunter Shinkarak.
Freddie Hamilton.
I guess.
Who, surprisingly, they did qualify.
Right.
I'm not saying surprisingly because I don't think he deserved to, because I like the player, but there were a bunch of guys who didn't get qualified.
Exactly. There was a bunch of guys in that same group. And part of that, obviously, is what he brought in Stockton. So to your point, or to my point, I guess, is what I'm saying, you know, we had the general manager on, and he said they're purposefully leaving a couple of jobs open. They want guys to compete. But there's no overripe Detroit, like they've been playing 300 games in the American Hockey League. They better finally make it kind of guys here. Don't you think?
No, you're right. I mean, Lyndon Vay is probably the closest thing that they have to that. Now, if you go to CalgaryFlames.com right now, you'll see that he is on the NHL roster.
Doesn't have
a number, though.
Oh, okay. Does he have an NHL number? See, that's the other... Kachuk's already got an NHL number.
He does, but he is on the prospects roster.
Yeah.
And I think there are a couple of wild card guys here as well, Rob.
Right.
Emile Poirier.
Yep.
He has been a disappointment. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
He was a disappointment last year. I think he was gifted the degree of learning the first year, right?
You
come into the league.
And he was better his first year than he was his second year.
Absolutely.
I remember how excited Peter Laborius and I were to finally see him get recalled.
Right. Yeah.
From the Adirondack Flames. He came up, I believe he made his NHL debut at Madison Square Garden. And he was fine. I wouldn't say he was good during a short stint in the NHL, but he was fine.
Yep.
I don't think he looked out of place. Certainly offensively, you could see where they like him. But I think he's a wild card, especially with a new head coach in place. I think that Mark Jankowski is a wild card, although as a centerman, there doesn't appear to be a spot open. But I did ask Jankowski, and you were there when I had this conversation with him, can you play left wing or right wing? And he said, yes, I can play all 3 forward positions.
Before he started in Providence.
If he's going to make this team, assuming everybody's healthy, it's going to have to be on the wing.
I believe Marcus Granlund's a member of the Vancouver Canucks because he couldn't do anything other than play center. Right?
Exactly. And the other guy who I think could be a wild card, and you talked about him earlier, is Matthew Tkachuk. And I think it's going to be more difficult for him to make this team. The year he was drafted, in comparison to how difficult it was for Sean Monahan, and even Brian Burke admitted, I would have sent him back.
Sure.
Now, in hindsight, the Flames made the right decision.
Right.
They eased him in at the NHL level. They protected him. They tried to keep him away from defensive zone faceoffs and keep him away from tough matchups. And he learned how to play in the NHL, had a really good first year. And he's grown as a player in every way, shape, and form, offensively and defensively since then. But there's a quiet confidence there with Monahan. When you compare him to Tkachuk, there's a confidence that isn't so quiet. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I do. I mean, look, when Sean Monahan came to his first training camp, he was good. He was great. I mean, he deserved to be there, but he wasn't wowing you with his enthusiasm or his his personality. That's not what he's about. No, he's a professional. He is the epitome of a professional businessman hockey player. Tkachuk's got, you know, the eye of the tiger, whatever you want to call it.
That's a great way to describe it.
There's a salivating going on there. And he's going to be devastated if he doesn't make this team. And back to the thing, I'd be surprised if he made this team. I wouldn't be shocked, if that makes any sense. I think he's got an uphill battle here.
It makes all the sense. And I get why there's a rule in place.
Yep.
But I still believe that there should be exceptions to the rule that guys like Matthew Tkachuk can't play in the American Hockey League.
I hear you.
I'm not saying that he couldn't go back to the London Knights and continue to develop as a hockey player, but I think that if he is not quite ready for prime time, that there should be another alternative than sending him back to junior. And I get why the rule's in place. It's to protect the Canadian Hockey League. I get it. But I think that maybe once every 5 years, a team can put a first-round pick in the AHL.
Your kangaroo court case has now grown because you can't do this at 3:02 when we have to switch gears. You can't bring up something like that. You can't, because that needs to be talked about, because that is a topic that needs to be debated, because I have very strong feelings about that. Your court date, sir, has been set at 4:30. We are going to put Derek Wills on trial. Uh-oh. Crimes against Sportsnet 960.
Do I need a lawyer?
No, but one will be provided for you.
I'm going to call Pat Steinberg.
Oh, no. Court case, not execution, Matt. I know you don't work this show very often, but we do like to give a little bit of an opportunity to defend oneself.
Was that the gavel dropping or gunshots? I can't tell.
Well, that was supposed to be a gavel.
Was it?
Yeah. It was.
I'm sorry. Maybe I'm just overly sensitive. So that's the gavel? Give it to me. Okay, thank you. Okay, so court will be in session about 4:30 this afternoon. Judge Matt Rose presiding.
Oh,
I will build my case against one Mr. Wills for crimes against Sportsnet 960, the fan. But when we come back, don't worry, you only have 90 minutes to worry about it. But when we come back, Football Fridays, with Justin Dunk, our CFL insider, we'll hear from Alex Singleton, and we'll talk about week five in the CFL. It's all coming up, Sportsnet 960, the fan.